If you've been hurt by a truck, you can call Colombo Law 24/7 and we'll be there to make sure you're taken care of. When someone is hurt by a truck, Colombo Law is the law firm people call to get answers. Hurt by a truck? Call Colombo Law.
Welcome into The Install with Greg Cosell of NFL Films, your host Buck Rising here with you. It was sweet music to my ears, Greg. I threw on the ESPN NFL matchup show. I heard Sal Pal say, the NFL, and it got me right in my soul. And then the football took place, and the Titans, you know, left their soul on the field because the Cardinals took it from them on Sunday.
Yeah, and, you know, I guess I guessed right because I did the piece on that game, and I chose to do a piece on Kyler Murray. I certainly could have done a piece on either side of the ball because the material was very strong from a year ago on either side. And, you know, after, you know, at least 20 or 30 seconds of deep thought, I decided to go with Kyler Murray running in the red zone. And obviously he scored a touchdown doing so, but that's something that that seemed to make sense for that game, given how poor the Titans defense was a year ago, and they were not good in the red zone. And Murray is so effective with that design quarterback run game in the red zone.
There was not a place on the field that Kyler Murray looked ineffective on Sunday. So I guess we should start there. I mean, Greg, it's hard to imagine that any player had as good an individual performance as Murray did against the Titans. He was spectacular. The accuracy did not miss a beat. The throws on the run where he's, you know, making defenders miss three different ways on the defense on a third and 10, ripping a ball for 18 yards to Rondale Moore and driving the Titans crazy on third down. Yet again, the struggles continue. But what did you see? I guess that's the side of the ball that we'll start on. What were the Cardinals doing to exploit the Titans defense? Because honestly, Greg, when I went back and watched this game a couple of times, I thought the Titans defense did about all that they could outside of a few certain situations that we'll talk about.
Well, you know, I guess the one thing that surprised me the most when I put on that side of the ball was how much 12 personnel they played.
Yeah.
Meaning that they played with one back and two tight ends. And that was actually their most used personnel package in the game.
They looked like the Titans.
Yeah, and I think when you think of the Cardinals, you don't think of them that way. Now, they did line up, obviously, with three wide receivers, and they did have meaningful snaps with four wide receivers, what we call 10 personnel. But they really lined up with two tight ends on, not quite half, but close to half of their offensive snaps. And the other thing that really stood out, which they do a lot of, and they were very efficient out of it, was empty sets. Mm-hmm. They lined up in empty sets, and they did that out of all three personnel packages, 12, two tight ends, 11, three wide, and 10, four wide. And just to give you an example of how successful they were out of that, Murray was 8 for 8 for 104 yards out of empty sets.
Yeah. Yeah. It was something to behold. Greg, I want to look at the Titans defense though, because there was a familiar concept that popped up from a year ago that drove fans crazy. It was DeAndre Hopkins' second touchdown on a 2nd and 5 play in the second quarter. Titans ran a zero blitz concept. They had off
17 yarder. Yeah.
They had the off man coverage, which is something that Titans fans thought they left in 2020 with all of the personnel changes that they made with designs to play a little more press man, and certainly they did. But they gave up a touchdown on it to DeAndre Hopkins, reminiscent of the Steelers game where they ran the exact same defensive coverage, and the result was the same. It was a red zone play. It was I can't remember who the touchdown Ben Roethlisberger threw it to. But what were the Cardinals seeing there to be able to exploit, and what does the Titans defense leave themselves vulnerable to in those zero blitz concepts?
Well, on that particular play, it was actually empty. They went to empty with Hopkins was in the inside slot to the twin side of the field, the two receiver side of the field, the boundary side. And Edmonds, the running back, was outside of him. And what happened is it's an interesting defensive concept that a number of teams use. It's not pure man. because you would not have Byard match up to Hopkins if it was pure man.
Yeah.
You'd have a corner match up to Hopkins, but the corner bounced outside when Edmonds was outside of Hopkins. So it's kind of a matchup off coverage, but it's not pure man. Now, there is no post safety in the middle of the field, so therefore it has a zero feel to it. I've talked about this with a guy that I've worked with for years on the matchup show, who's a former coach and scout, and we struggle with actually whether you want to call that zero man, because it's off coverage. It's not pure man the way a lot of teams play zero. Yet they did rush six, so therefore there's only five defenders to match up to the five receivers. But if it was true man, I do not believe they would have had Kevin Byard in their nickel playing on Hopkins man-to-man.
Yeah.
So it's some kind of matchup off coverage concept that's not pure man.
It's certainly perplexing to watch, and certainly given the result, doing the analysis in retrospect. But just to quickly flip to the other side of the ball for Tennessee, Greg, I mean, early downs were an absolute struggle for the Titans.
Yeah.
They seemed super predictable with the run-first approach that they had in the first quarter.
That's what they are.
Yeah.
I mean, they're good at it. Everybody loves it. And this was a game where they started out with their normal game plan approach, Buck. It was Henry run game at a base personnel, 12, 21 with the fullback blessing game, even some 22 where they had the fullback and two tight ends. But there were too many blocking breakdowns. They couldn't get anything going in the run game at all. I mean, it started with the first play of the game when Jones just with quickness beat Taylor Lewan inside and tackled Henry for a 3-yard loss. I believe that was the first play of the game.
That's correct.
And that was, that was their staple outside zone run. I mean, they played Titans football. It just didn't work.
Yeah.
So once the, and plus because their defense struggled, the flow of the game and the score took them out of continuing with that approach. And when they came back to it and had some success in the third quarter, and actually they had success running out of 11 personnel because the score dictated that they'd not be in base personnel packages. At that point, the game flow had already happened. So even though Henry had some nice runs, I don't want to say they're meaningless, but it wasn't really part of the game plan and the game flow.
They're the only team down late like that continues to run the football the way that they do, as far as I'm concerned. It was interesting to watch them get handled up front, Greg, because you're right. That's what people love about Derrick Henry and SEC, SEC country down here, Heisman Trophy winning, running back, run the football, play defense. That's what the Tennessee Titans have done since Jeff Fisher was here 100 years ago. What were you seeing from them on the offensive line that wasn't working? Was it just that they were outgunned with Chandler Jones and J.J. Watt, and the health being what it is at week one, that these guys are never going to look as good as they do at the start of the season? What were you seeing from the Titans up front?
Well, they just got beat individually. I mean, in the run game, guys just got beat, and that's what happens sometimes. It just happened far too often in this game, Buck. Guys just, there were too many individual plays. I mean, Lewan got beat in the run game. Saffold got beat in the run game. Tight ends got beat in the run game. I remember J.J. Watt making a great play, and he's so good with the arm over move where he, I think it might have been Swaim, where he had the arm over and beat Swaim and made a play in the backfield. They were just individual blocking breakdowns. But they played Titans football. They just had no success. And because the game got away from them score-wise due to their defense, they had to step away from that and basically become a passing team out of 11 personnel, which is not what they want to be.
How did they fare when they moved over to 11 personnel, though, Greg, and focused more on the pass? Because it felt like they found a little bit of rhythm after the Kevin Byard interception. They start going down the field, they start targeting A.J. Brown more. It took until the second quarter for them to do so, but it seemed like they found a little bit more of their rhythm, or is that just fool's gold?
I didn't really think they found rhythm in this game at all. I didn't think this looked like their offense. Tannehill was under a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
I felt there was no real rhythm at all to their offense. They had to abandon the run pretty early. Normally they don't abandon the run, but the game just had that feel that playing Titans football at a certain point was not going to be the way to try to come back in this game. So they start to throw it a lot more, and play action was irrelevant. So they were drop back throws, and they were not really efficient doing that. They weren't poor at it, but there were no explosive plays whatsoever in this game. The only explosive was the flea flicker, and that's not really a way to run offense.
No, it was, and that was a sign of desperation very, very early on in that game. So let's look at their opponent this this coming weekend. Seattle handles Indianapolis pretty easily heading into Indy. Now the Titans will head to the West Coast and face them in Seattle. I thought, Greg, that Russell Wilson was wildly efficient, but I'd like to start with their defense. I don't know why I was surprised by it, given what we have seen them do and accumulate some young pieces and parts along that defensive front. But I thought I was very pleasantly surprised by the product that the Seattle defense put out there and the way that they pretty well summarily handled the Colts up front.
Yeah, they did a very good job in the run game, and the Colts are another team that wants to really start off with the run game. And I tell you what, they played a lot of five-man fronts. They did that out of base, and they did that out of nickel. So that's something I'm sure you will see this week against Tennessee. You'll see five-man fronts. Now, when they did it in their base, they had Wagner and Brooks, their two linebackers. They were stacked, mm-hmm. and we know Wagner's a very, very good player. And they actually had someone you'll remember who played very well, by the way, in this game, Darrell Taylor from the University of Tennessee,
yep.
who actually played a lot of snaps. And in their base front, when they played against 12 personnel, he was basically a stand-up edge player. And he had some really good snaps, both as a run defender and as a pass rusher. So he played probably anywhere from 25 to 30 snaps and played well.
Yeah. It was a third-round pick out of the University of Tennessee a couple of years ago and seems to have found his stride up front. I saw them use – oh, I'm blanking on the safety's name. The safety for Seattle that we talk
Adams.
About is Jamal Adams. They used Jamal Adams the way that they typically like to. He was coming from all over the field. I know that he's still a bit of a mystery as a player as to what he actually is. But how big a factor was he in this game, not just when the Colts were in obvious passing situations, but in stopping the run, as we were discussing?
Well, it's funny you say that, because I thought Adams was used. He wasn't used as a blitzer hardly at all in this matchup. He played a lot of split safety. They played more split safety than I would have anticipated going into this season. But I think they made some adjustments in their defense in the offseason. And while there were snaps in which he moved around close to the line of scrimmage, he was not as active as he was a year ago and as one might expect. The defense and the way they chose to play defense made Adams more disciplined and structured. So he was not one of those kamikaze players in this game at all. Yeah. And their defense had a much more structured feel to it. They played high percentage zone coverage. Split safety concepts were predominant. Versus Carson Wentz dropbacks, they played about 70% split safety coverage. Now, it's very possible that was inflated with an 18-point lead in the fourth quarter, but this is the only game we have. We yeah. don't know. So we can't make a judgmental statement about here's what their defense is, because this game played out where they had a big lead. But the point is that Adams was not sort of the kamikaze run all over the place player in that week one game, as I think a lot of people expect.
I was curious to see, I looked at Russell Wilson's game. I watched the condensed version of this game on Game Pass on Monday morning, just to kind of see what they were doing to make Russell Wilson on the offensive side of the ball so efficient. We know Russell Wilson is one of the best quarterbacks in the league, but it seemed like Shane Waldron, the first year offensive coordinator for the Seattle Seahawks by way of the Los Angeles Rams, as so many offensive assistants are nowadays, really put them in a position to succeed. And it felt like they were able to run the ball a lot more at will, or at least the way that we've seen Seattle. We know that Seattle wants to run the ball, and we've seen them have success with that formula before, but it's been a while since they've been able to be effective doing it. And it allowed Russell Wilson to be effective and efficient in the passing game.
Well, they have a new offense because Waldron has brought a lot of the principles of Sean McVay and the Rams. So what you saw from their offense in this game, you saw a lot of 12 personnel. You saw no huddle tempo. You saw reduced splits, which is very much part of the Sean McVay Rams approach, where the wide receivers are closer to the formation. That's what we mean by reduced splits. We saw them use Everett, the tight end, who's very athletic, as the single receiver to the short side of the field, the boundary X, as we call it. They had shifts. They had motions. They had empty sets. They had jet sweep action. And that is a major part of that style of offense. For people who are familiar with the Rams, think of Robert Woods and how often you'd see him with jet sweep action. So they did that a lot, that jet sweep action, and they featured it with different receivers. And a couple of times they handed the ball off to Eskridge, the rookie wide receiver. They had conventional play action. They had play action boot. They had misdirection sweep run game. I mean, they had a lot of elements to their offense, and I think that all helps Russell Wilson. So this is a different Seahawks offense than the last number of years.
Yeah, it would. I mean, Russell Wilson looked incredibly comfortable back there. He was dicing up the Colts secondary.
And notice, it's funny you say that. Notice how he had fewer of those runs, which of course he's always capable of, but fewer of them because the offense allows you to play in structure more because of what it does to the defense. So therefore he didn't seem as random as he normally does.
Yeah, which is going to be a big part of this matchup coming up for the Titans. So let's move on, because we'll have plenty of Greg will spend plenty of time talking about the Titans on 3HL on his normal Thursday afternoon hit here in Nashville. But I want to focus on these three rookie quarterbacks that made their NFL debuts. None of the three won a game this weekend, but there were some positives, certainly. And I'd like to start with probably the best performance of the three, at least from my untrained eye. Mac Jones seemed to fumble away from being in position to win that game, Greg, for the New England Patriots against a stout Miami Dolphins defense. I don't know if Damian Harris will evaporate into the ether now that he's fumbled for Bill Belichick, but what were you seeing from Mac Jones and the Patriots that, honestly, I didn't think he looked much better or much worse than Tua, who is now not a veteran in this league but has NFL experience under his belt?
I thought Jones played very, very well, and that's a difficult defense to play against. In fact, watching that Dolphins defense, they do so many things. They make it very difficult, not only for a quarterback, but for your old line. I mean, so this was a real baptism by fire for Mac Jones, because this is a very, very difficult defense to prepare for and to play against. And I thought that he was extremely efficient. He moved well within the pocket, which his game must be. He had a good feel for pressure because they blitzed, and where it was coming from and how to move to avoid it without breaking down.
Yeah.
I thought he had a great feel for managing the pocket. And to me, he has an innate feel for what's pressure and what's not pressure in the NFL, because bodies around you are not necessarily pressure at the NFL level. You need to be able to manage that and navigate that. He got the ball out of his hands. He didn't hold the ball. He knew where to go with it, Buck. There were not plays where you felt like, oh, he got stuck. He knew where to throw the football. And what was interesting, because the thought was that this team would be a high percentage 12 personnel team, two tight ends once they signed Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry, he was actually phenomenal throwing the ball out of 11 personnel when they had their three wide receivers on the field. He was 18 for 21 for 196 yards out of 11 personnel, and those are that's phenomenal efficiency.
Yeah, I could not, but we had that game on in the press box, the tail end of it after the Titans and the Cardinals concluded, and I couldn't believe how comfortable he looked throughout the course of that game. I guess, Greg, what his traits coming out of Alabama, at least for somebody like me watching him and all the talent that he had around him on that team, if Joe Burrow had not existed the season before, I think we would have been talking about Mac Jones and the season that he had at Alabama in the same kind of lofty terms. He didn't look like he made mistakes in college. And I know the level of competition there is different, but how much of that were you seeing with the comfort level that he displayed in his first game?
There's no question, Buck. There's a natural poise and calmness to the way in which he plays. He looks comfortable, as if nothing is too fast for him. And the thing that's, I think, really important, and he wasn't under a lot of pressure at Alabama. I mean, you can find some plays, but it wasn't consistent. But he trusts his protection. And that's a lot of young quarterbacks come in this league and they see a flash of color, you know, in their peripheral vision, and they flinch or they react. even though it's technically picked up by their protection scheme, they just intuitively react. And he trusts his protection. He never speeds up. He delivers under pressure. He keeps his mechanics the way they need to be. I was very impressed with his performance. I mean, this is what he is, and this is what he has to be. So I thought it was really, really a good performance.
Poor Patriots fans. They have one down year. They find another quarterback, and now everything, even in a loss, it feels like the Patriots are winning. Speaking of trusting protection, Greg, it was difficult for Zach Wilson to do so against the Carolina Panthers. They were getting after him in the Sam Darnold revenge game, Panthers and Jets, over the weekend. We know the traits and the ability that Zach Wilson has as a quarterback. What did you make of him in this new look Jets offense, and what kind of stuck out about him?
Well, I have to tell you, I was very impressed as well, because he was under a lot of duress in this game. Mm-hmm. And obviously they got behind, not big, but they got behind. And when you're in a game like that and you're being physically beaten up, because as I said, he was under a lot of duress, he had to move an awful lot, so he couldn't really play a lot within the structure of the offense through much of the first half. And then to come back in the second half and play the way he did, I thought really said a lot about him. I thought overall there was a mental toughness to him, a physical toughness to him, a resilience to him that I thought was really strong. Now, he had some snaps in which he just didn't see things, didn't get a clear picture. The result was some throws he left on the field, meaning he didn't turn it loose when a throw was there. But that's to be expected of a rookie quarterback in his first start, particularly when you're down and you can't, keep throwing four-yard balls. Yeah. So I thought overall it was actually a very strong start for Wilson, showing both mental and physical toughness after that rough start. And you saw the traits. There were throws in which you saw the traits. That we all know about. So that's not a surprise, but I thought he did some really good things. I thought he had a 35-yarder to Corey Davis in the second quarter. It was actually his first long yardage drop back in which the Panthers showed basically a conventional four-man D-line front and did not disguise their coverage. So it made it a little cleaner for him. But I thought that he moved the underneath defender. He knew exactly what he had. He moved the underneath defender in zone coverage, and he hit Corey Davis on the crosser. And I thought that was really a veteran-type play. So overall, I was impressed with Wilson.
Let's move to Jacksonville in the AFC South. As we sit here at 3:24 on a Wednesday, Urban Meyer is, in fact, still the head coach of the Jags and not the head coach of USC. But with Trevor Lawrence, the Jags – it might have been the most surprising game of the weekend, or the most surprising outcome of the weekend. Turns out the Jags defense isn't necessarily fixed, and the Texans understood how to take advantage of that. It put Trevor Lawrence in unenviable positions. The running game was not there. They had to chase, so that was not an asset to them the way that you might have liked for a rookie quarterback, understanding what they were doing last year. Trevor Lawrence, what did you make of the situations that he was put in, and how Darrell Bevell tried to combat that and to no avail in the final result?
I thought it was another performance that showed a lot about the kid. He has not been in those situations. And maybe he had one game in his college career where he was like that. Was it the game against what was the college game in which they got down pretty good and they lost? Was that Ohio State? I forget. But anyway,
in the playoff, mate, that sounds correct.
Yeah, it was
but
in
I don't
the playoffs. It was definitely in the playoffs. So he's not been in this situation. And they even said that he had not lost a regular season game through high school and college. He'd only
been a while.
The playoff game, yeah. But the point is, first of all, you never want any quarterback, much less a rookie quarterback in his first start behind a very leaky offensive line, by the way, having to drop back more than 50 times. Yeah. So that's a recipe for disaster in and of itself. But I thought just like I mentioned with Zach Wilson, I thought Lawrence showed outstanding mental and physical toughness in a situation you do not want your rookie quarterback in,
right,
in any game, much less his first NFL start. The trait showed up on many throws. There's much to clean up. Look, because of the score, what Houston started to do, because Lovie Smith is there as their D coordinator, is they ended up playing just a ton of cover two, because that's Lovie's thing. And they were ahead by a lot of points. So let's play cover two. We are generating pressure with our four down linemen. Why blitz? Let them work against coverage and have to make throws into windows. And he made some really good ones. One interception, it was against cover two, and he just didn't. I don't think he thought that the corner would sink as deep as he did. I don't think it was a case where he didn't see it at all. I just think he didn't think the guy would sink as much as he did. It was only the last interception that was a total head scratcher. And again, the game was so far out of hand. But yeah, overall, I thought you saw a lot of his traits. I thought he hung in there. Like I said, you can't, it's not tenable or viable for them to have to throw the ball 50 times a game. But I thought he showed an awful lot. And there was one play in particular, which I believe was a 3rd-and-17 completion to DJ Chark. It was 27 yards. Yes, it started the second quarter. I thought that was a big, big time throw by Lawrence. And so there were a lot of positives. But when you throw over 50 times behind a poor O-line in pass protection, you're going to have some negative results. I don't care who the quarterback is. Who the rookie quarterback is. I don't want to make people think, oh, you know, that wouldn't happen to Tom Brady. Well, we know that, but I'm talking about a rookie quarterback in his first start.
Yeah, I love when people use Brady as like, oh, it wouldn't happen to Brady. Well, no, nobody else is Tom Brady across the history of the NFL. Greg, out of curiosity, the Monday Night Football game between the Raiders and the Ravens, do you watch that like a normal person? Like, are you sitting on the couch watching that on TV?
You know what, Buck? That's way past my bedtime. I've already had my milk and cookies, you know, and it's time for me to go to bed, you know. First of all, I don't even get home Monday night till like 9 o'clock, you know. So I put it on for a while, and I made it. I think I made that game midway through the third quarter, and then when I woke up the next morning and saw the score, I was blown away.
Right.
Yeah, I watched all of Derek Carr's throws in the game. I didn't get to Baltimore's offense yet, but the reason I wanted to take a look at Derek Carr is I did a piece on matchup last week with all their bunch concepts, the Raiders bunch formation concepts, and boy, did they do a ton of those in that game. But again, it wasn't luck on my part, you know, saying, oh, they're going to do bunch. I had watched probably 300 Derek Carr dropbacks this summer from 2020, and this is what John Gruden does. So it's not as if I was guessing, but I was just curious to see how much they did it against a defense that tends to play a lot of man-to-man coverage.
Reason I ask is because I watched the Peyton Manning, Eli Manning broadcast, and it felt like I was watching a game with you, Greg, with the way that they were breaking it down in the fourth quarter at the end of it. It was so, so cool, and I didn't know if...
They're a little smarter than I am, Buck, but I appreciate that.
But they're speaking the same language that you are, Greg, and I didn't know out of curiosity if you happen to catch it.
No, and it's funny. One of the guys I work with on the matchup show, who I've known for years, he actually was a college quarterback and years ago, and he said to me, did you watch? And I said, yeah, just bits and pieces, but I must have caught it at the wrong time because they were joking. And you need that. You can't have 3.5 hours of hardcore X and O. But now he told me they were phenomenal when it got to the fourth quarter in the overtime as far as just talking ball, because I guess they had Russell Wilson and Travis Kelce on. And so I'm going to watch more of it, you know, as we go forward.
Yeah, they'll get better as things progress, just like this podcast will, because now we have tape to break down. Greg is in his element. God knows he's exhausted, but it's week one.
Just one quick story I'll just tell you. You know,
sure.
Years and years ago, when he was a player with the Colts, I did a piece with Peyton Manning. So I went out to Indy and I interviewed him, and it was an X and O piece. And I studied my you-know-what off because it was Peyton Manning. And the last thing I wanted was to go out there and, you know, because we were sitting and watching tape. Right. And that was the nature of the piece. So, you know, I didn't want to be out there and have him turn to me and go, you know, you're wrong, or you don't know what you're talking about, or, you know, I mean, this is Peyton Manning. Yeah. And I'm going back. Let's see, Manning. God, this is probably like 2007, 2008. So this is numerous years ago.
Yeah.
And this is one of, you know, besides really getting to know and spending meaningful time and learning from Bill Walsh, doing that piece with Peyton was, you know, one of the highlights for me. So anyway, we're sitting there and we're watching tape, and we end up just kind of shooting the breeze. Cause you know, Manning, as people are now finding out, and they may have known already, Peyton's got that kind of personality. He's funny. He's easy. You know, he's so intense, you know, at his job, but that's not his core personality. He's funny.
Right.
And So he turned to me after about 20 minutes, you know, we had the camera set and we're doing the work, watching tape, and we're kind of just shooting the breeze, talking ball. And he turned to me and he goes, "Hey, Cosell, man, you really know this stuff." And that was one of the great moments because, you know, I know way more now than I did in 2007, 2008, but, you know, just, I really studied because I knew what plays we were going to do. It wasn't like they were random plays that we picked out of the air. And, you know, it just made me feel like, okay, we're good. We're good now. You know, this piece is going to work.
It's like Tony Kornheiser says all the time, affirmation, baby. You love to see it. Well, Greg, appreciate the time. Looking forward to the NFL matchup show on ESPN. Set your DVRs. Don't miss it. It'll get you ready for the football weekend with Greg and Sal Pal and Matt Bowen and the whole crew. They do an exceptional job. And make sure you make Greg happy. Leave us 5 stars in Apple Podcasts, a nice review. It's, you know, it's the same joke at the end of every day, but if I get a laugh out of Greg.
I feel like we're Uber drivers when you say that, Buck.
Listen, but with better health care, Greg, with better health care.
There you go.
All right, Greg, I'll see you next week, buddy.
All right, Buck.